What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Donald Trump can post a smaller bond, $175 million, in a New York civil fraud case. And U.S. teacher salaries have stayed flat for decades, and many are leaving the field.
A lot of other professionals, nurses, architects, lawyers, of course, engineers, accountants, college professors are all better paid, have better salaries at least than teachers. And so teachers feel frustrated by that.
Plus, Boeing CEO is stepping down as part of a broader executive shakeup. It's Monday, March 25th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Over the past few weeks, we've been covering the fallout at Boeing after a January mid-air blowout on a 737 MAX jet and ongoing production problems at the plane maker. Today, CEO Dave Calhoun announced he's stepping down at the end of the year. Calhoun had been planning to step aside, but frustration from airlines and regulators sped up his announcement and led to a broader executive shakeup. Boeing's commercial aircraft business head will step aside immediately, and the company's chairman won't stand for re-election. Steve Mollenkopf, a former CEO of Qualcomm, will take over as board chair and lead the search for the next Boeing boss. According to people familiar with the matter, Boeing's board met over the weekend and decided to address the company's leadership plans ahead of a meeting requested by a group of airline CEOs. Here now with more is Wall Street Journal Heard on the Street columnist John Sindreu. Welcome back, John.
Hello.
Calhoun came aboard at Boeing during another crisis, and he had promised to turn the company around. So what went wrong here? What were Calhoun and the other leaders involved in this shakeup not able to accomplish?
It's been a long time coming that this more shareholder-centric value culture has permeated Boeing. People talk about it starting in the late 90s. And it was hard for him to manage to do this quickly without angering people. But I would say that maybe the issue is that he didn't go far enough. You know, Boeing has always tried to tinker at the edges, first by not immediately replacing the previous CEO, then by having Calhoun come on board. And we have to remember that Calhoun himself is an insider, right? That he'd been at the company, at the board since 2009. So Boeing didn't do a clean break. That's just the reality of it. Many of us thought maybe they didn't need to, like, you know, maybe they could just fix the current problem, it would be enough. But it seems like this culture of bad quality control and bad execution, even on some good ideas that they have, is just everywhere. And, you know, they try and do a little bit, but it keeps blowing up at other places.
So as Boeing searches for new leadership now, what does the company need to do to satisfy critics and investors?
It's a good question, because again, these are difficult things to do. And we saw when Dave Calhoun said, well, if there's any issues, we'll stop production, right? What we see with that is that, of course, airlines and lessors, they're not very happy when that happens. So there is this trade-off between, no, we will get quality control back in check, but also doing that might also anger people. So it's one of those difficult things. And I think ultimately what they need is this notion of credibility, this notion that the new Boeing really is happening and that things are looking up rather than there will be another big scandal around the corner. And it's very hard to know who can do that. My impression is that though the instinct of these companies is often to go to an insider, and we have this possibility here as well, if you get someone from the outside that can really communicate the message that things are changing and that, you know, he will go as far as necessary, maybe that will give the new boss the necessary room to, you know, sometimes anger someone, say, no, you know, we're doing this for a good reason. And you will see how when I'm done here, all of these problems, they will be a thing of the past.
That's Wall Street Journal Heard on the Street columnist John Sindreu. A New York appellate court has ruled that Donald Trump needs to pay just $175 million to put his $454 million civil fraud judgment on hold during his appeal. While Trump only needs to pay a fraction of the civil judgment for now, he could still be on the hook for the full amount if he loses the appeal. The last-minute reprieve came on the day New York's Attorney General Letitia James could start enforcing the judgment. Trump's legal team had said it was virtually impossible to secure a bond to cover the entire amount. Trump now has 10 days to post a bond or pay cash to cover the $175 million. Meanwhile, a New York judge has set an April 15th trial date in a separate criminal case against Trump on charges of falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to porn star Stormy Daniels on the eve of the 2016 election. Trump has denied wrongdoing. We're in the midst of basketball's March Madness, and this year it comes as there's a new push focusing on unionization in sports, most recently at Dartmouth. There's a lot of opinions on all sides of this debate, and we'd like to hear from you, our listeners. What questions do you have about the unionization push and what it means for colleges, athletes, and sports overall? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's wnpod@wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4327. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and questions. Coming up, U.S. teacher pay hasn't increased in 3 decades. How new legislation could change that after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Many people, including politicians, have been advocating for higher wages for teachers. President Biden even mentioned it during his State of the Union address earlier this month. But the reality is, teacher pay has stalled for 3 decades. It's about the same, adjusted for inflation, of course, as it was back in 1990, about $66,400. Even though states are putting more money into public schools, the funding has gone toward more staff, rising health care costs, and pensions, not teacher salaries. Now, some states are looking at making pay raises mandatory. Joining me now with more is Wall Street Journal K-12 education reporter Matt Barnum. Welcome to What's News, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Matt, teacher pay has stayed flat for decades. How is that playing out in classrooms across the country right now?
Well, we would worry that flat pay is going to make it harder to recruit and retain teachers. Now, there's a question of how strong the evidence is for that, but economic theory would predict when other college-educated professions are more attractive and pay is going up there, that more teachers are going to be leaving the classroom and fewer people are going to be entering teaching. And that's exactly what we see. We've seen in the last couple years a pretty significant spike in the number of people leaving teaching. Now, I should say that's only the last couple years, and this pay trend has been going on for decades, as we've discussed. So it's not clear if that's what's driving it, but we do see more teachers leaving. And we have seen a longer-term decrease in the number of people wanting to become teachers, and some of that could be due to stagnant pay.
And what about the argument on the other side that investing in these other aspects, support staff, is a better way to spend the money?
That's a credible argument. And actually, I heard that from some teachers. Some teachers said, you know what? My job is easier and my students' lives are better and my school is better functioning when I have more staff, when my class sizes are smaller. So it's not obvious that it's a bad trade-off to say we're putting more money into additional staff rather than paying existing staff more. The researchers I talked to as well said, you know, there isn't a clear research evidence on that question one way or another.
So, Matt, how are states now looking at fixing this? We have some that are now considering these pay mandates. Do they have any traction?
We see but a handful of states saying, you know what, we are going to mandate a higher starting salary. And how big of an effect that's going to have depends on where the starting salary was previously. But we do know at least one state, Arkansas, they set a salary minimum of $50,000, which is very high, especially in rural parts of Arkansas for first-year teachers. Most states, it doesn't seem like they're going that drastically, and some states are still just debating this, but that's something that states are considering to sort of force the issue.
What about on the national level? Is there anything to be done there?
President Biden very briefly mentioned it, but he hasn't laid out a particular plan to do so. And we have a divided government. And so there's very little chance in the short term that something's going to happen. There has been a bill proposed by Democratic Congress members to raise the minimum starting salary to $60,000. And that would be a really big deal in certain parts of the country. But at least for now, that appears to be a real long shot. There's a lot of resistance in some quarters of the federal government stepping in here because education has historically been a state and local driven issue.
This is so interesting to me because I know a lot of teachers and they were struggling a lot during the height of the pandemic, and a lot of folks left their profession. On the flip side, you also have people like those you spoke to who say, you know, we're not quite in it for the money. This is for love of the job. And I wonder how that's breaking down and how that fits into the debate over where to spend funding on schools.
Different teachers have different ideas, but I think teachers really do feel like, I knew that this was what I was getting paid. I knew I wasn't going to get rich being a teacher. I knew I was maybe getting in it for better benefits, for better job security, for the love of teaching and for wanting to do good. And at the same time, they feel like, I'm really not well paid for how hard I'm working. My story notes a lot of other professionals, nurses, architects, lawyers, of course, engineers, accountants, college professors are all better paid, have better salaries at least than teachers. And so teachers feel frustrated by that. What you might see is a bigger impact on the salary piece of people who are considering becoming teachers. If you're already in the profession, it's harder to leave. It's harder to start a new career. But the people who are considering the profession, they have all the options available to them. And so pay could make a particular difference in whether you're deciding to become a teacher or not.
That's Wall Street Journal K-12 education reporter Matt Barnum. The U.S. and the U.K. are condemning China's growing aggression in cyberspace. Today, the Biden administration hit alleged Chinese hackers with sanctions and criminal charges. The British government, meanwhile, accused Beijing of hacking the UK's electoral register to steal the personal details of tens of millions of voters. The combined actions are the latest by Western governments to put pressure on Chinese leader Xi Jinping over what the West sees as a global hacking operation. Officials have attributed that campaign to Chinese intelligence agencies. Israeli officials have canceled high-level meetings with the Biden administration in Washington. The decision comes after the UN Security Council approved a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The U.S. abstained rather than vetoing the resolution, angering Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government. U.S. abstention allowed the UN Security Council to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire for the first time since the war began last October. Israel has opposed the demand unless it is explicitly linked to the release of hostages taken by Hamas. The European Union has launched investigations into Apple, Meta, and Google parent Alphabet under its sweeping new digital competition law. As we've been reporting, the EU's Digital Markets Act took effect earlier this month. It requires some of the world's biggest tech companies to comply with new rules aimed at increasing competition in digital advertising, search, and apps. The investigations announced today are the first under this new law. If the companies are found to be in violation of the rules, they could be fined as much as 10% of their worldwide revenue. All three tech companies said they'd engaged with EU officials on the new rules. Apple said it's confident its plan complies with the new law. Google said it would continue to defend its approach and that it had made significant changes to the way its services operate in Europe. Meta said offering subscriptions as an alternative to ads is a well-established business model in many industries. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.